Therefore, I'm ready for the calls, and I see the board is already beginning to light up. The first one sounds a little familiar. Let's go to Howard in New Paltz. Howard, you're on.
How are you?
Good.
About 10 years ago, I did a mural in New Paltz on the outside and inside of a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner called me back last year because he was going to redo the whole restaurant, so he wanted me to change the mural around, do some new stuff. And he changed his mind. Now, there was no written contract or anything the first time or the second time. And he decided, he got a call from Uncle Louie.
Uncle Louie.
If you know what I mean. He's got somebody that'll do it cheaper and better.
Of course.
Well, anyway, it was done over, and this is not out of jealousy or, you know, it was really bad. I mean, really bad. So anyway, some of the mural that she completely finished, she redid the whole outside of the mural. It was a 30-foot mural. And the inside, she left some of what I did there. Now, being that there was no contract, it was a verbal handshake, you know, whatever it was. Is there anything that I could... It's been sticking on my brain for a long time.
Go, Polly, go.
Well, this comes under the heading of moral rights as opposed to copyrights.
Yeah.
And New York State does have moral rights legislation. Yes.
But there's federal moral rights, the Visual Artist Rights Act.
Oh, right. Okay.
VARA.
Right. So this might be covered under that.
Well, what would be covered? I don't get what a moral right is.
I think you would be able to get your name disassociated with it.
Yeah.
If your name is still there as a signature, you can get that removed.
No, there's no signature, unfortunately.
Are you famous, Howard?
A lot of other ways, yeah.
I mean,
pretty well known as an artist, yeah, New Paltz. Yeah.
Okay.
New Paltz.
Under the law, when this law has been in effect since 1990, I think, and...
It's the federal law now.
It's a federal law, and if you have a... And then it was amended because people were, you know, there were murals on buildings that, you know, they couldn't take down. So they amended it so that the building, if there's a mural on a building, the building owner has to give the artist some kind of notice, I think it's 90 days, that he's going to repaint it. And the artist can, there's, I guess, ways that sometimes you can actually remove the mural, depending on the materials that were used.
Most often not, though. Usually they just paint it right on the side of the building.
Right, but there are ways that actually you can actually extract it, I've heard of. So he did sort of give you notice, but he didn't tell you he was going to paint it over. You know, what your damages are here is it's open to question, but it does sound like he's violating that law.
Yeah.
How would I find out more about that law?
You could look up VARA, V-A-R-A, Visual Artists Rights Act,
yep,
on the internet. You can call Paul Rapp.
Call Paul Rapp, I think, yeah.
Speak. He's licensed to practice in New York State.
And I have so much... And he has experience with that law.
Has experience with that law.
If he can find it.
Your phone number, or is that?
Sure, go ahead.
My phone number is 413-553-3189.
Do it again.
413-553-3189. Or, you know, any copyright lawyer or art lawyer is going to know this law pretty well.
I spoke to one, but I'm dealing with dyslexia and a lot of other stuff, so I hear things in fragments.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Have to hear like 100 times over again before.
Well, this radio show will be archived on the website, so you can listen. Yeah. Get his number.
One thing in the future, though, I think you ought to make sure you prepare a contract and have both parties sign that contract that maybe puts into place some plans for what to do in the future should the mural owner decide that he or she wants to take it down or change it or whatever, that kind of helps define and establish your rights and future actions.
Yeah, and a copyright, a contract doesn't have to be a big multi-page extravaganza full of legalese. It can just be a letter of agreement where you just outline what you require from the person that commissions the mural and what they will get from you. And
right.
as long as you're both in agreement and you both sign it and date it, it's a binding contract.
Okay, Howard, you've had it. Goodbye. So long.
Thank you for your information. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
check
Howard.
Out, check out my website, the newpulseartist.com.
Okay, all newpulseartist.com. Okay,
Howard.
Thanks, Rob.
Okay.
Thanks, Howard.
He got it in.
Let's go to Rob from Troy. Okay, Rob from Troy, go.
Yes, thank you. I'm actually looking for some clarification on something that I think that Paul either wrote or said. I'm an artist. I post photographs of my paintings sometimes on various websites, and I also post my own photographs on places like Flickr mm-hmm. and so forth. And I thought that I heard Paul say that there was basically no way to protect the photographs in particular from someone taking them and using them as sources for their own artwork.
As sources for their own artwork.
Go ahead.
Oh, if they use your photographs purely as reference,
mm-hmm.
meaning that they don't merely copy your photograph into watercolor or Photoshop it a little or something like that, there's no protection for that. But
I see.
They would have to transform. They would have to create a new work, not make a derivative work. So,
well, what about all the appropriators, Polly?
They're not creating new works. They're creating derivative works.
Sometimes.
So help me
Most
with this.
Most of the time.
Well,
so help me with this. Is it legal or not?
If they create a derivative work,
yeah.
No. If they create a truly derivative work, then the owner of the copyright has an exclusive right to create derivative rights.
But if they're appropriating and making what's called a transformative work.
And that's where it gets foggy.
Whatever that means. And there's a case in front of the Second Circuit Federal Court right now involving Richard Prince, which is going to define the outer boundaries of what can be done.
Who can rob what?
Yeah, how much you can take and what you can do with it.
Yeah,
because that's a really extreme case, and it's going to make for a very interesting decision.
Okay,
let's get back.
I'm not so worried about appropriation as much as if someone takes a photograph that I live on the Cape during the summer. If I take a photograph of Provincetown and someone essentially uses the same composition. Maybe changes the colors, shifts some boats around, things like that. But, you know, if I could look at it and say, I think I took that photograph.
Well, everybody takes the same photograph of the same boats, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. And that's what I'm getting at is, especially in a very public place where everyone has essentially shot the same photograph over again.
It's the old it depends thing. Yeah. I was involved with a photograph of a couple of photographers who were fighting over a photograph of some pyramid, and the two photographs were almost indistinguishable. But then it came out that the shot was taken from a parking lot with a place where photographers go, and there are usually three or four photographers there 24 hours a day taking the same picture.
Yeah.
And so then it becomes really hard to, you know.
Well, also, if you and I were standing next to each other on Commercial Street in Provincetown, and we were using similar cameras and similar settings, and we took a photograph at exactly the same time, both of us would have the copyrights in our own individual photographs, even though they may look almost identical.
What if you hadn't copyrighted it?
It's automatically copyrighted.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yes.
How come?
When you create it.
I did a painting of Times Square not long ago.
Uh-huh.
And
well, nobody else has ever done that one.
Well, no one has done it like I have.
Of course.
it's something that probably everyone in the world who's been to Times Square has shot that same thing. So in that case, you know, I'm just you know, I did the painting, but someone else could just as easily say, well, I was standing next to you. But I was curious to know whether there's anything, at what point does it become yours uniquely, as far as a photograph?
It is yours uniquely, your I particular think, yeah. photograph. But mm-hmm. whether...
But if it's a public place where anyone else could have shot it,
I mean, when there's
under
really
similar light conditions and what have you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, Rob, we got to let you go.
Great.
Because
I appreciate it.
Because we're up against a hard break here. Hold on a second.
Okay, thanks very much. Bye. Right.
Okay, so we're going to just take some time here.
Support for WMZ comes from Mount St. Mary College, Newburgh, offering 7 evening and weekend bachelor's degree completion programs for adult students in accounting, nursing, business, human services, and more, msmc.edu. Henry's at the Farm Restaurant, Milton, located at Buttermilk Falls Inn, using produce, eggs, and honey from the inn's own farm, dinner Wednesday through Sunday, lunch Friday and Saturday, and Sunday brunch, henrys@buttermilk.com. Hildene, the Lincoln Family Home, Manchester, Vermont. Historic home, Pullman car, museum store, and walking trails open daily year-round, 9:30 to 4:30, hildene.org. And Subsidium Technologies, working to help enterprises use custom communications and cloud services to help improve information technology environments, subsidiumtech.com.
Yo, we are back with our wonderful panel.
Yahoo.
And we love them, Paul Rapp, Polly Law, Bill Westwood III, and they are really the best that we could ever bring to you, and we're very proud of them. Let's go. Oh, there are two free phones, 1-800-348-2551. We've got a Tim in Guilderland. All right, Tim, you're on.
Alan, thank you. Sure. Great panel as always.
They really are.
My issue is this: is that I'm a musician and a songwriter, and my understanding, and is please correct me if I'm wrong, is that as soon as I write a song, that belongs to me.
Yes.
The copywriting issue is simply a mechanical, documenting issue. Is like get in touch with the Library of Congress and register it as a copyright.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong about that?
No,
you're right.
Right, the Copyright Office is just accepting your sworn declaration that you created the work when you said you did, and filing it.
But of course, there's always the case of Pete Seeger and Wimoway,
yes.
Which we know. You know, he does it, he puts it down, and somebody, you know, The Lion Sleeps, puts 3 new sentences in it and claims it's a different song.
Yep, plenty of people have done that.
Yeah. So what's
That's
your...
disgusting.
What's your concern or problem?
No, my issue is that I'm actually not concerned about the whole copyright process, only that it's a little bit of a pain in the neck. But my understanding, I just wanted you guys to tell me that when I write something...
It's yours.
It's mine.
Yep.
Yes.
It is from the moment I write it.
Yep.
The main difference between the two processes is that if you do not register your copyright and someone infringes on it, your remedies are greatly limited.
Reduced.
Yeah.
They're greatly reduced. And that's the whole issue, is that it's a legal issue. And
did somebody do it to you? Did somebody steal your
song? I would love somebody to do it. Because that would mean I would love somebody to copy my music. That would be it. And then whatever, you know, litigate it and find out. But that's not the point. But the other point is this, and I wonder if your two guests could
three
guests, but three?
Three yeah, guests. Three guests.
Okay. Oh my God. Yeah, what kind of budget do you have over there?
It's huge.
It's huge.
Yeah. Glass of water, a cup of coffee. Yeah.
Coffee and a donut?
No
donut.
No, my question is that I got on, I was going to register something on the Library of Congress, and you guys know so much more about this than I do, is that you used to be able to get just an online printout of the copyright form. And for some reason, this is my recollection, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that you can't get an online, you have to mail it in, physical mail, you know, whatever they call it. But I was surprised that you couldn't record a copyright online. Am I wrong about that?
Yes, you can do it online, and everything's electronic now. It's really, once you've been through it a couple times, it's really easier, I think, than doing it the old way by hand.
I don't know. I've done hundreds, and it still frustrates me. It's one of the worst designed online environments I've ever seen.
Well, I was about to add.
No. I've been online. I've seen many worse websites than that.
Oh, boy.
Okay, Tim from Gilderland, you've had your shot. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Okay, and let's go to RJ in Albany. That's one free phone, 1-800-348-2551. Go, RJ.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm a photographer, and I also enjoy watching YouTube music videos. Mm-hmm. And I want to, thinking about, you know, making like video photo montage with music, and I'm wondering, you know, music by popular artists, and I'm wondering if I'm allowed to make a montage like that and post it on YouTube.
You can post it, but it if it's a popular song, it'll probably get taken down fairly quickly. The major publishers actually have mechanized bots that go around and look for the melodies of the songs that they own and then automatically mm-hmm. declare them down. Technically, you should have permission for use on YouTube videos of copyrighted music.
But it's amazing how many things you can get on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that are there.
I mean, a lot of times...
I've seen other, you know, pretty popular songs on YouTube with montages that I don't think were made by the artist.
Well, sometimes the artist allows the music to be used, or they just don't object to it.
Yeah, or they just don't police it. But I know, you know, for any really big hits, you know, on a major label, there's a pretty good chance you're gonna get taken down.
So what's the worst that can happen? Getting taken down? Can you get sued?
If you do it enough, they will ban you from YouTube.
Yeah.
Who? The YouTubers?
YouTube will. Yeah. It's like they have like a three strikes kind of policy. But you know, no one's going to come. The copyright police aren't going to come and take you to copyright jail. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, RJ.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye. Good luck.
1-800-348-2551. Jim from Cambridge. All right, Jim, you are now on. Can you hear me, Jim?
Go ahead. Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Question, if I am taking pictures as a volunteer firefighter, and I take those pictures while I'm covered under, let's say, the volunteer benefit law, or as I am essentially doing it while during district time, so at like a fire drill, or at a call, who owns the copyright to those images? Would it be the fire district, or would it be me taking the pictures?
It would be you taking the pictures.
Really?
Unless there's some sort of agreement with the with his employer as such.
He's a volunteer,
right?
You know, unless your role with the fire department is to take pictures. Explicitly.
Well, really, anyone could have that role of taking pictures,
right?
Because we have cameras on the trucks.
But you're not an employee. I don't see how you could be considered to be an employee.
But he's using the fire district's equipment.
They're not using. It's your own camera, though.
No, not necessarily.
Well, that makes it.
Ooh.
See, that's good. That's question, right?
Very
there.
Good.
So
yeah.
What are you using? Using the camera from the fire department or the one on the truck?
Correct. Either one, because they're they would be both district property.
Does your group have I'm not supposed to be answering questions. I'm just supposed to.
Go ahead, Alan.
But does your group have a handbook? In other words,
not that covers photographs.
Sounds like somebody took a really good picture. Doesn't it? Then it becomes sticky. I'm still going to say it's probably yours, but it's a closer question than I initially thought.
But I'm also being covered, even though I'm a volunteer, I'm also being covered under workman's comp at that same time by the district.
And you're indemnified by the district.
Correct.
And do the photographs have a function for the fire district? Is it something they want done? Obviously, because they give you a camera.
Correct. Let's say at a drill, it could be used for a newsletter, which would be published, or a book of, let's say a fund drive type book, kind of thing.
But well, whether or not you can use them for your own benefit.
Right.
I'm going to use this fact pattern for my next law school exam.
But Paul is the attorney here. He can correct me. If I were in your shoes, I would go to the district. And I would discuss it with them, and I would see if I could get some type of letter of agreement that states that you can own the copyright to the photograph you take. Would that work?
Except that's violative of rule number one.
Which is?
Never ask.
I saw that coming.
There is that, but I mean, if you wanted to do, say, a book and use the photographs, so you could work something out with the district where they would... You know, you
what
would
if
just
the
agree
district
that,
wanted to use something, but yeah. I didn't want them to use it.
I think that's stickier.
Yeah. Then it gets into the whole question of who owns the copyright. And it is
right.
Because if you were, the whole thing is if you were an employee taking these photos in the scope of your employment, then the employer.
It's work for hire.
I'd like to turn this around a little bit. What if you had the company camera? And you took a picture of a naked person through the window of a burning house. You see my point?
Not yet.
Unfortunately.
Not yet.
Yeah. So in other words, have you basically used the camera for something that you shouldn't be using it for?
Right. Well, certainly.
That's a moral question.
That becomes more of a moral issue as opposed to what I'm trying to discover.
Well,
shouldn't you be alerting the naked person that the house is on fire?
Or that they're being photographed.
Right.
Or maybe the house wasn't on fire.
And I think the other question is that somewhat relates to that is if I am a volunteer and I take a photograph during that same time period, and let's say it's my phone. Granted, now it becomes my equipment, but I'm taking that picture while I'm kind of pseudo-employed.
And still part of your duties as a volunteer firefighter.
Right.
You know, I mean, who owns the equipment is just one of the many factors that you take into consideration when you balance these things. But this is a really good close question. And, you know, when you said volunteer, the first thing I thought was, well, you're not an employee, but...
Right.
Under the rules, you're looking more like an employee every time you give us another fact, and so I'm.
You're an unpaid.
However, even if you're an employee, you can get around work for hire if you go to your employer, and you get written permission from them to own the copyrights to the work that you create. Mm-hmm. So,
or at least co-own.
Or at the very least co-own, but. I've certainly known people whose employer didn't care, and they said fine. They sign a paper and they're safe. So from my perspective, in spite of Alan's warning, I would approach it that way. But
okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Tim.
Thank
Appreciate
you
it.
For yep. your time. Appreciate it.
You should have invited him to your class, Paul. So
that was a good one.
That was.
Yeah, but you know what I really love, and we'll get on with all these other questions. But I really love it when somebody says something. It's been several times today. When somebody says something and you get a universal groan from the four of us, I think that's fabulous. Okay, let's go to Stuart in Kinderhook. Okay, Stuart, go.
Hi.
Hi, Stuart.
I'm an actor, and I performed in a commercial a number of years ago, and I want to see if I can take what's known as a screen grab, which is just a still from the photograph, and then use it on a book cover that I'm writing.
Not without permission.
What's the book about?
Well, okay. Let Paul qualify.
What's the book about?
It's about my life. It's my memoirs.
This commercial
had a big impact for me because an ex-girlfriend saw the commercial. She called me, and after 24 years, we got together, and now we're married.
You know, I think there's a really good fair use argument to be made here because it's transformative. The purpose for this is to illustrate his book, not to sell whatever the product was, and that makes it transformative. However, I think if you called whoever it is, owns the copyright to the they'll say fine, you know.
Right.
I think you may have to give credit.
You'll give right. them a credit, and you'll actually be promoting their product again in your book.
But I have a question about the quality of the photograph from a screen grab being print worthy. Because DPI was going to be greatly different.
Yeah, no, I know, but from what I've attempted to do it already, and it looks pretty good. And the thing is, nowhere in the photo do you see the product. You know, it's not as if I'm holding up anything or anything like that. It's
But the issue is that they're going to own the copyright right. to the advertisement, probably.
Ask them.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Asking is always the safest, I think, the safest place to go. Look, even if it's transformative, as Paul says, and I agree with him, it probably, based on what you're describing, probably would and could be transformative. The problem is that's not going to stop somebody
right.
who owns the copyright from you know, slapping you with a lawsuit and forcing you to prove that it's transformative.
Yep. Now, but two questions, because I'm really sort of behind you guys on this. What does transformative again mean?
You know it when you see it.
I don't get it.
It's taking it for, it's using it in a different way. For a different purpose in a way that.
To a different effect.
That arguably under fair use, okay, is a new use of the word.
Okay, and the other, transformative as opposed to.
Derivative.
Derivative. And what's derivative again?
Derivative.
Didn't we just have a big crisis in housing over that?
No, this is a different kind of derivation.
Yeah. Yeah.
A derivative work would be like if I took a photograph that someone owned and I just copied it in watercolor.
Yeah.
It's like an adaptation.
Adaptation as opposed to.
But you use that as the basis for your new work.
But wouldn't everybody argue that everything's transformative if they were in trouble?
I do.
He makes a living off of doing that.
I'm
fighting with a infringer right now who's calling their use transformative, and it's not.
One last thing, and that is, do we really think that every time somebody worries about getting sued, I mean, the chances of getting sued are de minimis, aren't they? I mean,
well, it depends on whose toes you step on. If you step on
Disney,
Mickey Mouse's toes, you're
in a very public way.
Trouble.
Yeah.
And if you step on Bill Westwood III's toes,
watch out.
He knows what he knows what he's doing.
And if you step on my toes.
Yeah. Okay, Stuart, thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. And we're going to take a short break. We will be right back. So if you're Tom or Maria or Matthew or Suzanne, you stay right there.
Support for WAMC comes from Smith College Museum of Art, presenting Collecting Art of Asia, a four-part exhibition celebrating 100 years of Asian art at Smith, from traditional to contemporary, now on view, smith.edu/artmuseum. Saratoga Health and Wellness, a fitness facility offering exercise, nutrition, personal training, and weight loss programs, saratogahealthandwellness.com. Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York. Featuring Miele, Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, Vapori Vapor Cleaning, Sales Service Repairs, LEXIVAC.com. Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York. Serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts. Catering services available, thedamcafeanddeli.com. And Washington County Tourism, featuring Maple Sugaring this weekend, March 16th and 17th, and Raptor Festival on March 23rd and 24th, washingtonnycounty.com.
That's right, and we're very glad to be back, and, you know, even lucky to be back. So we'll go to Tom in Cambridge. Okay, Tom, you are on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm going to try and squeeze a twofer in, if you'll allow me. I'm establishing a business out in Cambridge to manufacture and install solar products. I've been in the industry for years, and so I have used at times a tagline on my emails that I've never copyrighted, and I wonder what's involved in doing that. Do I need to do that if I want to use it for my business?
Trademark it.
It sounds Yeah, more like a, unless it's a very long tagline. It's the kind of thing you would trademark because you're using it sort of to identify your business.
Right. Plus, okay. Words or short phrases can't be copyrighted.
Can't be copyrighted. So, you know, you would trademark it like you would trademark a logo or the name of a business because it's something that identifies your business.
You know, and, like Dow Chemical brings good things to life.
Right.
Have
you been using this, Tom, all along?
Just in personal emails, not in business.
Okay.
Okay, so that's a one-fer. Where's the two-fer?
Are you interested in hearing it?
Sure.
Well, you said you want to sneak it in.
Yeah. When we turn our face to the sun, we feel the power to heal the earth. So I'll trademark that.
Yes.
Pretty good.
And
those six other guys are already on the.
That's the thing. You best hurry, Tom.
You didn't steal that from a Native American tribe, did you?
The second is I helped another solar company do an installation 3 years ago, and unbeknownst to me, they had photographed me in the process and used it on their website. I don't know that I want to use it on my website necessarily, but I would like to. Am I okay copying it and putting it on my Facebook page?
Were you an employee or were you an independent contractor when you did that?
It was volunteer work.
But still,
whose camera did you use?
Yeah, it's the photographer.
I didn't use it. They used it. That was not the fire department.
I mean, I think you're okay. I wouldn't use it, heavily to promote your own business. But if you want to put it on your Facebook page and they tell you to take it off, then, you know, fine.
Yeah.
Or as Paul always says, C&D.
Yeah, just go ahead and do it.
And they've since stopped using it on their website. So.
Yeah,
so they probably won't even care.
Right.
You might crop it a little differently or something, although that won't affect the fact that the photographer owns the copyright. But
Tom from Cambridge, since all five phones are blinking off the hook, we're going to let you go, okay?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye. That opens up one free phone, and we'll go to Matthew from Southampton. Okay, Matthew.
Yes, just a real quick question.
Okay.
I'm a singer-songwriter, going back to a caller a few minutes ago, talking about protecting his music. I once had a guitar teacher that had told me, I thought he was a smart guy.
Here it comes.
He said, record your music, put it in an envelope, mail it to yourself, and don't open it.
No.
No, Matthew.
I told you that was going to happen.
I know about that Library of Congress process, and that is a pain in the neck.
Well, I know, but the only way...
Or lower.
That's right. The only way you're going to protect your work, though, Matthew, what you're talking about gives you no protection at all. Zero.
Yeah. Okay.
And you can gang register your entire library of songs that you've
for
done
up fee.
Till now for one fee.
So you can hire somebody to do, like Paul Rapp, you could hire somebody to do that for you, right? So because if it's a pain in the neck, you don't want to.
Yeah, because you could trip up and say something wrong. And I've had people come in with registrations they've done themselves where they just had the dates wrong. And if push came to shove, the registration would probably be invalidated. Although it's, copyright's not rocket science. I mean, a lot of people do it and get it right. But if you have questions, maybe call a copyright.
Well, thanks
officer.
For the advice. I figured there must be a much more modern way to do this.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably the biggest urban legend about copyright that there is.
Is the old school?
Yeah.
Is your guitar teacher still alive?
Pardon me?
Is your guitar teacher still alive?
Yeah, he's on Facebook with me. He's a scout pastor now.
Well, tell him.
Write him a note. Don't do that anymore.
Tell him not to do that anymore.
Okay. Very good.
Thanks, Matthew.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you, guys. Longtime listener. Love it.
Great.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have two free phones now, 1-800-348-2551. And let's go to Maria in Olive Bridge. Okay, Maria, you're on.
Hi. I have two questions, but the first one's more important. One is in the field of architecture and the other in video. I am not a licensed architect, but I did design a house for myself and my husband. And already people have started copying elements of the house, not the entire thing, but certain things that I did that were somewhat unique or that were variations on themes that you do see around, let's say, Victorian or Adirondack architecture. But for the most part, the house is quite unique, and professionals have confirmed that that's the case. And people have started to copy elements. And not that I'm going to run out and sue anyone, but I was just wondering, what protection do I have, either in the paper plans, you know, the actual printed plans, mm-hmm. and just in the existence of the house? I mean, I have myriad, tens of thousands of photographs of it. Anyway.
I wish I didn't know as much about this as I did. But I'm involved in a case where a local architect has sued a dozen local builders and architects, claiming that his works were taken. Architectural works and architectural plans can both be covered by copyright. The Congress made it clear in 1990. They added it in. But it's still not clear just what it covers. And to the extent something is driven by function, it's not going to be covered. To the extent something is really not terribly unique, it's not going to be covered by function. I mean, we've got a bunch of houses in this litigation that are all very similar. But the question is, did the second user take anything that was protectable because it's a house plan? So,
well, also, you yourself said that you took elements of Adirondack and Victorian homes and
not literally. I mean, I didn't lift an entire thing with its perfect dimensions and put it on and stick it on my house, which is what a lot of designers do, and they look kind of ugly. But this was, it's very integrated, all of the elements that I used. Go ahead.
I understand that, but to me, this sounds like it's kind of drifting over towards the fact that you can't copyright a quilt pattern, because it's folk knowledge.
Well, but people still do. But the combination of elements that you have might be protectable.
Yeah.
Well, I think the first place to go, though, is she should register the copyright. Right?
And see if she can do it.
And see if she can cover it and protect it.
Yeah, and they'll probably accept it. But then the question is going to be, what parts of this are protectable? Because ideas and just basic sort of plans and instructions are not things that are subject to copyright. It's things that are creative and expressive. And so we're not answering your question at all, are we?
But let's say, Paul, let's say her design is unique.
Yeah.
And she wants to register, and she registers it.
Yeah.
Then if somebody took the design wholesale,
yeah,
she would have protection. So
yes.
I think the first step,
Maria, is to register
yeah. it.
Yeah.
And that's going to give you the maximum amount of protection to whatever's available. And if someone does infringe your work, it's the only leverage you're going to have.
Is that you're registered.
Is that it's registered.
Yeah. But as far as the photographs of your house, if your house can be seen from a public space, you can't stop people from photographing it.
No, it can't. It's in the middle of 160 acres of woods.
Yeah. So how are they getting photographs of it?
Oh, there are people who, well, one architect lied and said that he came up here, he drove up the driveway, and he said he was looking for the builder. He was looking to see about hiring the builder, so he wanted to see the builder's work, and I believed him, and I took him on a tour of the house. And then I don't know exactly the way in which he copied it, but I heard from other people that he was, planning to do that, and it really frustrated me. And the house has not yet been published. Architectural Digest was interested in it, but wanted to wait till I had it furnished, blah, blah, blah. Hmm. But in the meantime, people are building, using, I've been told, and I've even seen on one person's plans, that they literally lifted one whole section and put it right on their plans.
Well, I think you'd be well advised to register the
stuff. Well, I'm sorry, I tuned in late. So I didn't get any of your information. And
okay, the person you want here is Paul Rapp.
Okay.
Who is the lawyer on our panel?
Hi there.
R-A-P-P?
Yep. And my email is paul@paulrapp.com.
Okay.
Thank you, Maria. Appreciate your call.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Okay. Let's go to Gavin in Albany. Okay, Gavin, you're on.
Hi. I posted several photos on Flickr of a vacation that I went on
mm-hmm.
Back in probably 2009 or 2008. and I got a message soon after asking me if someone could use my photos on a website, mm-hmm. As long as they give credit. So I looked at their website, and it turned out to be a for-profit service. So I replied to them saying, well, yeah, you can use them as long as we can work some kind of compensation out. So we worked something out, and you know, got my compensation and everything. And I went on the website recently and discovered that they were using my photos for advertisements for their service without giving any credit to me.
Or compensation.
We kind of worked out a compensation. It wasn't monetary compensation, but they allowed me to use their service to an extent.
Okay.
But they were using my photos, or they currently are using my photos as advertisements without giving credit on those advertisements. Mm-hmm.
Did you ask them? Was that part of your deal with them that if they use them elsewhere, they would give you credit?
Yeah, they said they would give me credit for using my photos.
Well, I think that's justification for asking them. I will say to you that, you know, compensation is typically based upon usage, and the greater the usage, theoretically, the greater the compensation.
Oh, okay.
Obviously the compensation aspects of this is water under the bridge, but, I think you should probably register these photos and maybe go back and have a discussion with them.
That sounds like good advice.
Yeah. Is it too late to, it's not too late to register them and have this be grounds for an infringement, is it?
Well, have you asked them?
I have not yet. I haven't talked to anybody yet.
I'm just asking. Say, look, you agreed to put attribution on here, and please do it.
And you could even say, look, the usage is greater, so you got to compensate me more.
Yeah, I would talk to them first. I would still register it, but your chances, I think, of getting an infringement judgment are pretty slim considering your prior arrangement.
This is a breach of contract action, not a copyright action, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But even though they didn't credit me on the photos that they said they would, and they're using that,
Well, that's part of your contract, not
that's
not
the breach of the contract, yeah.
Go ask them. Thanks, okay. Gavin.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Jim in Cleveland's Hollow. Okay, Jim, you're on.
Yeah, hi. This is a little bit of a different aspect of things. I'm asking you guys how I can help protect my son, in some sense, who was a victim in a mass murder 7 years ago. So there are others who are trying to make movies of this. Do I have any rights to be protected from that, or can I protect my son's?
Probably not.
Even though it's fantasy.
I mean, if they portray your son in a manner that holds his memory up to ridicule, that really defames him, possibly. It's going to depend on the state you're in. New York does not have very tight laws about this kind of thing.
This was in Washington and Seattle, the mass murder, but I'm here in New York.
Yeah, but the fact is this became, newsworthy, and your son became newsworthy as a result of being murdered, and so people can report on it and can dramatize it. They have a First Amendment right to do that.
I have to wait basically after the fact, and then
and
when we find out that it's really offensive to everyone because it's unfactual. Then I have grounds to sue.
If they portray your son in a untrue and defamatory, manner, if they in a way that's going to hold him up to ridicule.
Is there any way he could demand to see the script before they start shooting?
That's what I was worrying about.
I don't think so.
Or even after it was shot.
Only if you had reason to believe that they were going to do what I just said. I think would you have grounds to go in and see what they did?
I would have to go to court and show
beforehand.
Clause.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it help, just for the sake of the discussion, for Jim to write them a letter and saying,
it's been done, Alan.
Okay.
Yeah. Have they contacted you for background information?
Actually, no. They they're pushing ahead. They got some funding through Kickstarter, and they're pushing ahead with this.
And so the Kickstarter.
And I have to be very careful because I really can't fringe. And I just wanted to hear what you guys said about this. I mean,
but this
know,
this sounds like not a particularly not particularly professional production. So
unfortunately,
that,
it is.
Really,
even though it's Kickstarter, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, well, our thoughts are with you, Jim. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much.
Appreciate
I appreciate it.
Yeah, Mike. Well, we can take, I think, one more call. So, Al from Newburgh, it's got to be quick. Go ahead.
All right, no problem. Hi, everyone. It's a great show. I'm wondering about taking a published piece of writing and creating a MP3 recording that I can freely distribute to my friends.
To your friends?
Who wrote the book?
Adam Mansbach.
But you're not going to be publishing this. You're just going to be sharing copies with your friends.
Correct. It will not be for sale.
You're not going to put it up on iTunes or anything.
And they're not going to put it up on iTunes.
Yeah. Ask them, please, do not do that. But I why not?
You know, yeah. If you keep it just in your circle of friends.
Sort of a virtual version of having them come over to your house and you read them the book.
Yeah.
Kind of. And,
right.
Sure.
Just the notice in the actual book says cannot be distributed by recording or digital means.
Yes, without the express permission of the commissioner and the NFL games. Yeah, I mean those. What you're doing might technically be considered an infringement, but you're doing a private publication, and so no harm, no foul, really.
Yeah.
Okay. So Al, I am so sorry, but we are out of time, and thank you.
No, that's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Annie from Schenectady and Lisa from Utica, who we left on the line, and we are very sorry for that. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Transcend Dental, West Hurley and Manhattan, Dr. Bruce J. Milner providing general and cosmetic dentistry and laser treatment for moderate to severe periodontal disease, transcenddental.net. And Unison Arts Center New Paltz presenting David Lindsay Abair's play Rabbit Hole, performed by Mohonk Mountain Stage Company's Reader's Theater Group, directed by Christine Corfus, Fridays and Saturdays, March 15th through 23rd at 8, unisonarts.org, Mango Tree Imports, Boston Spa, New York, a locally owned fair trade retail store featuring spring accessories and home accent pieces, open 7 days a week, first Fridays until 9 p.m., mangotreeimports.com, and Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, for organic vegetable and flower seeds, home seed starting supplies, and seminars on improving gardens, wardsnursery.com. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Shartok. On tomorrow's program, Birding with Rich Guthrie. Stay tuned now for a news update. But before we go, I think we have time very, very quickly. Polly, what's your email address?
pmlaw@buttonwoodart.com.
And Paul Rapp?
paul@paulrapp.com.
And Bill Westwood?
billwestwood.com.
Okay, everybody. Thanks so much for being with us. We enjoyed being with you. See you soon.